CoinWorld Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about CoinWorld Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.
Welcome to the CoinWorld Podcast with your host, Jeff Stark.
And as I've said from day one of this show, this is a big tent hobby. There's a lot of room for folks.
And Larry Jewett.
And learning has been such a tremendous amount of this journey.
The CoinWorld Podcast.
The CoinWorld Podcast is back for another episode, and we are going to get into the weeds with John Roberts and explore the topic of VAMs. That's Morgan Dollar and Peace Dollar Varieties. Thank you so much for being here this week.
There's got to be a lot of great information that John's going to impart upon us right here from his experience that he's gotten into it, how he got interested in it, and how everybody's benefiting from some of these new discoveries that are being made out there. So it was great to have John. I'm Larry Jewett, and we really appreciate the fact that you're here with us once again. Thank you for your support of the Coin World Podcast as we continue on in our journey here in numismatics. A lot of folks are away as we're recording this up at the Whitman Expo in Baltimore, and it just brought to mind here with you just coming back from some travels over in Europe, how great it feels to finally really feel like you're right back in with it once again, with the ability to go travel and go to shows and go see the things that are going on. So I know that the excitement is continuing to build, and 2023 is looking like a really, really positive year. I hope you're feeling that way as well.
Oh, yeah. And you know, there's some metals movement this week that's got me excited just because it's nice to see the number on the balance sheet moving up instead of down. And figuratively, I don't have things that organized that I know what I have. But, you know, it's good to see the movement there. There's just been such robust activity. I will say, if I didn't say it enough in last week's episode about the Munich Numismata, boy, was it sizzling. There was some great business there. Everybody, so many people I talked to were just, you know, one of the best shows ever, the best in 5-10 years, all sorts of positive comments. And I think we've seen that, you know, the ANA midwinter or spring, or however you want to term it, their national money show a couple weeks ago was lots of good comments about that. We're expecting great things about coming out of the Baltimore show. I know I have a little local show, well, localish, Springfield, Illinois, coming up. There'll be a little, I think, a Sunday show. Go up there. That'll be fun, and that's always a chance to just add some more stuff to the collection. I really need to stay home and organize it, but that'll come down the line.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, we can't let this enthusiasm we have out there, because I was just thinking about the shows and the fact that some of these shows, I mean, have been back for a little while yet, but there was an element of the shows that just had took a wait and see approach and weren't really in a rush to get back there. And I think most of that element that had taken that wait and see approach is actually now starting to come back and get things back up to full strength, as they say, when, you know, a team that was man down gets back to full strength. But just getting back to full strength and allowing the opportunities. But you hit on something that right now it made me think about it a little bit too, and that is in our quest to go out there and continue to expand our collection, sometimes we get a little out of sorts, and I'm personally guilty of this because I haven't been able to spend the time I wanted to with the things that I have, and I'm not real sure that my records are up to date as far as the acquisitions that I've made or the things that I've recently picked up. As a matter of fact, I know I made some purchases at the Fun Show in January, and at this point, they don't reflect on my Excel sheet that I use here. And I run the risk of, if I would have the opportunity to get back out there, I could end up making a purchase that I didn't really need to make because I'm not as up to speed. I'm just curious, how do you organize your collection? Do you use spreadsheets? What do you do to use? And it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. It's just the idea that you just have to have some kind of organization to it.
I appreciate I appreciate that you think my collection is organized. I have, let's see, I have 6, 7, 8, 9. I have like 9 long double row boxes in the other room, and 6 or 7 of them are alphabetized. I guess I have about 10, and then the other 3 are alphabetized. And I have lots of little small single row boxes full of stuff that need to be worked up, where I go in and I write down what I think the fair market value is on it and incorporate it into those other boxes. And gosh, I have several of those. I have bags of stuff. I have, it is not organized is the short answer. And woe unto me. I would hate to be in a situation where an heir would have to look at it and try to make sense of it. And I know it is incumbent upon me to get more organized and get more, get a better handle on this. Right. But you know, I don't have a year to stop and spend organizing.
Yeah. And that's, I'm thinking about this, and it's going to be blasphemy when I say this, but when I was buying up these bulk bags of world coins that were of different countries, and you just didn't know what you were going to get there. And I got caught up in buying all those, haven't done that in a while, and had this toolbox that basically had little drawers, and all the coins from Brazil went in here, and all the coins from Mexico went in here, and all that. And it's just like, you know, I haven't been able to get in there and look at those lately. But it's just the idea that, good heavens, I mean, this is just like, if somebody says, do you have this? I have no way of knowing, because it was just like, this is a really cool design. I'm thinking, yeah, I think I've seen that before. Maybe I have one of those. And that's really not the way to be. And I really owe it to myself to kind of get back on top of that. I mean, I'm keeping track on the phone of all the different countries that I need for my birth year collection, and having an understanding of what state quarters are still out there. Now that I have 15 Florida quarters, I don't really need to pursue that one anymore. But just the idea that I'm still missing a few, and I just need to make sure that I'm incumbent upon. It was interesting. One thing that did happen recently is that I went to a local restaurant, and the lady there, you know, it gave me change, and I got my change back. It was 3 quarters, and they were all bicentennial quarters. Mm. And it's like, oh my goodness, this is great. And she goes, what's great about it? And I said, bicentennial quarters, that's 47 years ago. You know, that's a long time ago. And she goes, oh, a friend of mine, I needed quarters. He brought in a roll of them. And I went, do what? And I realized that they're just, for the design value and the fact they were cool and special and all that, it's not I'm not going to put my kids through college on it, but those are just neat to have. And it's always thrilling to me to find one in a discovery here. And she says, well, yeah, but I need the quarters for the business. And I managed to talk her out of $5 worth of them, but I got them, put them with my bicentennial collection of my own. But that's just like, it was like, you know, just having to explain. And I recently just had somebody, in fact, last night, as a matter of fact, when somebody found out I worked for Coin World, and it's like, well, yeah, I used to collect coins and I still have them somewhere. I got to find them. And it's like, yeah, you do. And we'll talk next week. So it's going to be great to see that. I mean, that was the same place where I had the opportunity to experience someone who owned a Pan Pack Slug. And it was just like, this is awesome. Well, so just, I mean, talking about this, just raising it up here, that's just so interesting to me.
One of the challenges with this is, so a couple weekends ago, I went to a, I guess it was last weekend, I went to a quote unquote swap meet slash garage sale type thing that was out by where I grew up. And I had been there 2 years ago, did not make it last year. And there was one seller that had numismatic items for me to consider, and they were all 1904 St. Louis World's Fair related. Mm. And I was able to buy an instant collection of elongated cents, encased cents, and all the different, there's, you know, horseshoe shapes, there's chamber pot shape, there's just a simple round encasement. And there was also 2 of the 5 bronze medals that were issued for the fair. So the fair had award medals like gold, silver, bronze, like the Olympics. And then they had a couple commemorative type medals. And I got two of those medals. Well, those don't fit in any sort of schema, any sort of, you know, they're not going to fit in my 2x2 box. They're bigger than that. And one's shaped like a shield and one's square. You know, how do, and I got a so-called dollar in there, and I got a really neat token that turns out I think is really uber rare. Most of that stuff, there's no way to record it or process it in a contextualized way. You know, it's one thing to say, oh, I have a 2012 Albania 1 Quindarka or whatever. Yeah, not that that coin exists. I think I'm mixing the year and the denomination, but
I'm writing it down because I'm going to look for it now, you know, so.
But, you know, it's what do you do when you have the stuff that really doesn't fit inside that sort of, you know, it's not in the catalog of, standard catalog of world coins. It does present a challenge. But it's a good challenge to have because I've been eyeballing these pieces for years and never wanted to bite the bullet. But this seller, I was able to make a deal that was very advantageous. They were happy to get rid of a slew of items. This was from the seller's mother's estate. So, you just never know what you're going to luck into. But now I have to figure out, I need to put them in 2x2s. I need to, you know, record it somehow. I don't know how I'm going to do that. But again, a good problem to have.
Yes, indeed. And that's, we go back to the quirky collector, like call myself, because those are the kind of things that intrigue me as well. That's why I like tokens and metals so much and just enjoy seeing those. But let's go ahead. While you threw it back to 1904, let's throw back a little bit now into numismatic history. And what's your discovery, as discoveries are so very important to us in this program here today, what's your discovery from this week in numismatic history?
All right, so we'll keep it brief here. We're going back to March 18th, 1944. What happened that day? That was when New York Herald Tribune writer, no names given, tipped off the Mint to a coming sale of Colonel James W. Flanagan's 1933 St. Gaudens gold $20 double eagle in a Stacks auction. Now, we know with the benefit of hindsight that this sale did not happen because the Secret Service seized that coin. But it's, you know, it's interesting. We've chronicled the saga of the 1933 Double Eagle on this program many times. And I thought that was too cool to, omit. It was neat enough to mention because it fits in with that larger story that we've been telling all these weeks, months now. And, would that sale had gone on, and how the numismatic record might be a little different. The market for that coin might be a little different. But alas, no ifs and buts. If ifs and buts were candy and nuts, it'd be Christmas every day, right? You can't ifs and buts on what would have happened, but it is kind of neat to think about it in any event. So great. That's what was happening this week in numismatic history.
What about this week in coin world history? You got a year in mind you'd like to talk about?
Yeah, so we talked to John Roberts, and he joined Annex in 2003. So I thought, let's go back to the March 17th, 2003 issue. And there's a couple of stories, what you would call above the fold in a proper numismatic newspaper journalism sense that are fun. But I want to focus on a smaller story on the front page, which reads, headline reads, House passes 5-cent coin redesign measure. Subhead is Mint likely to produce two designs for Jefferson 5-cent during 2003. Again, hindsight, we know what happened with the Jefferson nickel in 2004, 2005. I believe the timing of this was such. There were no special designs in 2003, right? Not that I can think of. And but there would be designs, special designs in 2004 and 2005, and this relates to the ongoing story of how, you know, we have been, I would say, criticized, but, you know, there's certainly folks in the hobby who say, well, you know, why are you talking about politics when it comes to numismatics? But my contention is coins are political objects. They are the result of politics. They're the result of politicians, and they carry messages that convey what is meaningful and memorable and important to the nation. So they are inherently political, and thus the hobby is inherently political. So we see that this all comes down to Congress mandating new designs, and the Secretary of the Treasury can weigh in and all that. The designs that did result with the Westward Journey series in 2004 and 2005 are some fun ones. I recall with joy a chance to interview one of the artists, although it was later found out there was maybe a photograph that assisted his work in that. So anyway, that's what jumped out to me in this week in numismatic history.
There was a lot of talk about the in coin world history. There's a lot of talk about the 5 cent coin on the letters page, but the one I truly attracted me, other than a letter from somebody from one of my nearby towns here, but this one was called Revive Half Dollar. It's time to breathe some life into the once widely circulated coin, the half dollar. I believe that the half needs a major facelift. It's too big and somewhat of a new nuisance to have in one's pocket or purse. The half needs to be somewhat smaller. I believe that it's about time we had a bimetallic coin, and the half is a perfect candidate. This alone may not be enough to revive the half dollar, which is why I believe that the half should look at its little sibling, the quarter. We have the 50-state quarters circulating. Why not the presidential half dollars? Let's pay tribute to every American president, starting with Washington, as quarters pay tribute to every state. The inner ring, or the core of the coin, called an obverse, could contain a bust or profile of the president being honored. The reverse should contain the presidential seal most emblematic of that president's term. Any and all lettering should be contained on the outer ring. It could be done 5 presidents a year and should be continued as each president passes. Hopefully this idea gets to the hands of the governing authorities, as I would like to see it happen. And that was from Demetrius Karavitis of Astoria, New York. So not a bad idea, obviously. That one attracted me because of the discovery of the half dollar in the coin machine not too long ago. Wow. No, I'm taking a look at the time. It's really flying right now.
Yes, yes. So just a few more minutes left. So let's get to trivia. I appreciate the chance to look backward at that letter because, again, you know, we got presidential dollars, not half dollars. But so the idea or the concept was at least realized, if not exactly how the letter writer envisioned. So last episode, because of my trip to Bavaria, I wanted to know about the 2 euro coin that celebrates Bavaria. This is from the German Mint's Bundeslander series. And I wanted to know what coin that was from the first series and what iconic place, image, building, thing, object appears on the coin, because I happened to get to tour it a little more than a week ago. Do you have any idea whatsoever to which I am referring?
It's a huge, nice looking building, I think, but is it a museum or some kind of is it a government building? I'm not really sure what it is that I'm looking at here. Maybe some kind of castle, something like that.
You've stumbled into a correct result in the sense that yes, it is a castle. We're looking at the 2012 2 euro. This shows the Neuschwanstein Castle, which was built by, I want to say, Crazy King Ludwig the First, but I could be wrong in that regard. But you can look it up. It's called the Fairy Tale Castle. It is gorgeous. I got to go after the Numismata a couple days later, took a day trip to Linderhof Palace, Oberammergau, the place of the Passion Play, and then the castle. And that's always been as long as I've known that this castle exists, I thought, oh, that would be so cool to go to. And I was delighted to realize that it was just a quick trip for me there in being in Munich. So for next week, real quick, I want to know, we talk about with John Roberts about VAMs. You'll hear that just in a moment. And I wanted to know, there's a very particular VAM related to the 1888-0 Morgan dollar. What is the name of that VAM? And my lips are sealed. John Roberts' lips might be sealed. Here's that interview. Think about the question while you're hearing about VAMs from John Roberts.
Coin World Podcast is pleased to have John Roberts on as our guest here today. As John is a very familiar face and name to those who are subscribers to Coin World as the columnist for About VAMs. And there are many, many talents that John has that we don't get the possibility of explaining them all. That's why we had to have him on here. John, thanks so much for taking your time to be here.
Oh, thanks for having me.
That's great. I had an opportunity to meet you face to face down here in Florida back in January and didn't get a chance to spend much time with you here. But, first of all, the main title that you have, and, you are known as the Director of Attribution Services for ANAX. Can you explain to me what that means?
I do attributions.
Okay.
In other words, I do variety attributions on a number of things. Go figure, the chief thing is VAMs, or Van Allen Malus varieties, as described in the Comprehensive Catalog and Encyclopedia of Morgan and Peace Dollars. Some people call us vampires.
That's kind of funny.
Never heard that.
Well, there's a few of us out there, maybe mostly among ourselves, but there's a community out there that collects Morgan and Peace Dollar varieties. It's a close-knit group. It's a small world, but we're vocal and we have some influence. I've made a good living doing it.
And that's where that leads me to where I should have actually gone with this for the first question. And that is, how did you get interested in this? I mean, tell us a little bit about your journey as you got started in numismatics in general.
I started off as a kid. One of a Christmas present, I think I was about 10 years old, I got a Christmas present from my older brother, which was at least part of his coin collection. And he gave me a red book. So I had to look everything up and got interested in the stuff that I had in front of me. And, as a preteen, coins were interesting to me. As teenagers and as a 20 something, we tend to do other things. But then, as I got a little bit older, I came back into the field and was primarily focused on collecting dollars and just having the type of eye that I do. Varieties was a natural occurrence. It's look at things too closely and you're going to find varieties. When you start seeing varieties, you have to investigate them, and that led me straight into VAMs. It's taken me into other series as well, but it got me interested in varieties. And then when I got out of the Army, I couldn't really do the same kind of stuff that I was doing in the Army, so I had to find something else to do for a living. And I ended up being a numismatist, and I turned my hobby into a job. I played coin dealer for a couple of years, and then I took a position with the ANAX.
Did you always have a natural curiosity? Because you seem to have to have that curiosity if you're interested in VAMs.
Oh, yeah. I've always been a nerd. I'm proud of it.
You also have a special relationship, I gather, with Leroy Van Allen. Can you tell us a little bit about how much how much he's impressed you in your journey here?
Well, having the interest in Morgan dollar varieties in particular, I discovered his book, and shortly after I got involved with searching for Morgan dollar varieties, I found one that was previously unlisted. I couldn't figure out exactly what it was. And so I wrote to him, and he wrote me back. quickly and was very courteous, and he invited me to send the coin in. I got my first discovery piece back in 2000. It was actually on Independence Day. I still have the letter. It's dated July 4th, 2000. Hmm. And it has my first discovery on there. And just through correspondence, and as gracious as Leroy is, if you've ever met him, I mean, he's almost universally regarded as one of the more gracious individuals in our field. I had a chance to get to know him through writing. And then a few years later, I was involved with Dr. Mark Kempton in his research on clash dye varieties. We got a chance at Leroy's invitation to go meet him in person. And he's even more gracious in person. And I had a chance to meet his now passed wife, Marilyn. And they're just wonderful people, and you know, being able to spend time with him on several occasions it makes for a joyful day. You know, they say never meet your heroes. Well, I have, and it was a great experience.
It's always nice to know that, you know, that your heroes are real people too, because this is such a relationship business that we have right there. So does Leroy read your column?
I think he does, but he's never specifically mentioned a specific column, but I know he reads some of the stuff that I do because he's quoted me.
That helps. Jeff, you had a question.
Yeah, I can't help but wonder, you know, you talked about making your first discovery on Independence Day 2000, and of course you've been a long-time Coin World columnist. You're covering these topics in many cases, in your work on a daily basis. What kind of opportunities for discovery are still out there? I mean, I have the VAMD book. It's rather large, and I know there's websites like Variety Vista and some of these other platforms for people to find information. Are there still discoveries being made, and what should people be looking for? How should they approach?
Absolutely, there's still discoveries being made. And if you want to know more about VAMs, I strongly encourage you to visit VAMworld.com. There's the complete VAM catalog, or virtually complete VAM catalog, on the website, as well as an interactive forum where you can talk to other collectors. As far as VAM research goes, this is the best place in the world to go. At this point, I have probably a couple of hundred discoveries. They're not all VAMs, but probably a couple of hundred discoveries to my credit. Some of them are my own coins. Others are things that I found on other people's coins or revisions of existing listings. We're doing new discoveries now, and Leroy's now retired, and it's one of the feathers in my cap is I'm now a person who gets to write new VAM listings. And I did one just a couple of weeks ago, as well as doing an update on something that's going to be the subject of my next column. Found something new on a coin that was already known, and it'll be the subject of my next column. And it's that process of discovery. There are a number of things that are continually being researched. One of the focuses now is people going through every known marriage of a specific date and trying to identify what's current, some of the listings that may be redundant, and what's not listed. So yeah, the field is still ripe for discoveries, particularly on some of those dates with very high mintages.
And is it is the motivating factor just the chance to be a modern day explorer, even in a numismatic sense, or is there often concomitant financial reward with these varieties? I mean, if they're newly discovered and barely known, maybe there's not much of a market for it. But does some of that translate later into a market for things?
Some of it does. I mean, there absolutely is a treasure hunting element to what we do. But if you think you're going to get rich doing BAMS, you're probably going to be sadly mistaken. There's an old adage about coins in general. You know, the best way to make a little bit of money in coins is to start with a lot.
Yeah.
But for most people, it's the thrill of exploration. They're like me. They're variety minded people. They're trying to identify what they have. Like me, they all look at their coins far too closely, to the point where we may all be cross-eyed and blind by the time we're done. But that pursuit of knowledge, that finding something that maybe no one else has seen before, or just being able to answer the question, what is this? How did this get there? How did this happen? I think that is the chief motivating factor rather than any kind of pursuit of wealth. It's the pursuit of knowledge rather than the pursuit of wealth. It does help that they're tangible assets that are actually worth something.
And I think the historic value of everything, and again, the curiosity of holding something like this and kind of wondering what it was like in the time when these items were created. I mean, it's totally different times. So you have to have a sense of appreciation of history as well.
No, absolutely. And there's a human element to it too, is that some of the things that we perceive as varieties today were the results of accidents. In some cases, you know, like with clash dyes, with a failure to feed in the press, that was not a welcome thing for the press operator at the time. It's kind of a violent event, and you'd have to think on some level, perhaps dangerous. There are coins that you look at, and you'd have to think that that person that was sitting behind the press had a very bad day and may have even gone ducking for cover when the event that created the variety feature that we see happened.
Definitely so. Now, you know, a lot of times as we get involved in hobbies like this, we can be very passive or we can be very active. In addition to a lot of the work that you're doing writing for Coin World and also working for ANAX, you're actively involved with a lot of organizations. Tell us a little bit about how much involvement you have and what drives you to be so involved.
Well, the thing with coins, well, a lot of businesses, you know, they say it's who you know. Well, that's the work. Know people. Get out there and get to know people. And for coins, there's no better way of getting to know people than being actively involved in the various clubs that are out there. From the local level, for myself, it's the Central Ohio Numismatic Association, or CONA, or sometimes better known as the Green Hats. Going to my local coin club, the people around here all know me, and they know me in a positive way. And then to national organizations like the American Numismatic Association, which I've been a longtime member of, or Central States, which is coming up shortly, or for my specialty, the Society of Silver Dollar Collectors, which I've served on their board for years, and I'm now their president. And the National Silver Dollar Roundtable, which tends to be more of a professional organization, but having relationships with these people and being able to steer that organization and that, as a member of their board, is invaluable. To have a say in what's happening within our industry is important, in my opinion. And I've found some of these service positions to be both personally rewarding and to see what happens for other collectors as a result of people coming together and trying to build a strong community.
And another way you enhance that, of course, is making these presentations that you have for many years with CONA, and also at the fun show where you have the opportunity to meet with these individuals. How gratifying is it to have someone in which you've made a presentation come up and have them explain to you how much of an impact it had?
It's an honor. Helping to grow a new collector or reinforce the collecting efforts of somebody who's been at it a while to steer them in a new direction they may not have gone before. It was done for me. You know, Van Allen took time out of his busy day to write to me and back and forth, and other collectors took the opportunity, even going all the way back to that first coin shop that I walked into, where the proprietor of the institution tried to explain to me to buy nice coins and buy a loop and how to hold a loop. People have done this work for me, and I get to do it for a living. So I do have an obligation to try to help that collector that follows on behind me.
Yeah, very definitely. I mean, we're nothing more than caretakers when you stop and think about this. And being caretakers here, we got to pass along knowledge as well as the items themselves. How much of a collection do you presently have personally? I mean, do you have a lot right now? I'm not asking, you know, for a number necessarily, but what's your collection like?
Well, it's changed. I mean, I turned my hobby into a job, so it loses something. You get a little bit jaded. It's natural. I wasn't expecting it at the onset, but I mean, I still collect BAMs. I have some impressive things in my collection, but I've gone in other directions too. I collect medals and tokens now that have images of coining presses or allegorical images of coining on them. That's me being a collector again, rather than being a professional. I don't even specifically know what I'm looking for beyond that general theme. And I get to discover new stuff all the time. I mean, it's maybe well known to other people, but I find something new every once in a while. And I also am an avid collector of Columbus Civil War tokens, and I pride myself on my collection of those. But like I said, I do have a nice collection of VMs as well.
Glad you mentioned the Civil War tokens. That's Civil War tokens, I think, are such a fun area for at least the part of the country in which, you know, they were issued. When you look at a store card setting, which is what you have, how have you been able to learn Columbus history by collecting them? What have you learned about Columbus history?
Well, one of the biggest things is there are sutler tokens from Columbus as well, from Camp Chase. And one of the presentations I've done for Kona is on Camp Chase in the Confederate cemetery that's there. Merchants that worked the camp were both with the soldiers and with the prisoners of war. Doing the presentation, I walked through the cemetery. I found three graves with the name John Roberts on them. As far as I know, I'm not related to any of them. But there's a personal connection. I mean, where the pieces circulated, you can stand in front of a lot of those places today, even though the place itself may be gone. All that's left of Camp Chase is part of the old rail line and the cemetery. There are places named Camp Chase in the area. There's baseball fields over it. Some of the places in downtown Columbus, one of the areas has been swallowed up by the grounds of the State House, where the streets are gone, but where those merchants had been, they would have been on the back edge of the lawn of the State House, if I'm remembering correctly, but I know it's been swallowed up by the State House.
Very cool. So that gives you the, as you say, the personal connection, and it's a way to really view local history through a different lens.
And the thing about it for me, I mean, I grew up 50 miles from Columbus and didn't realize this. I mean, I don't associate Central Ohio with Civil War that much. I mean, that's interesting to me.
Actually, from where you're from, I think Morgan's Raid went through part of there. And there's Civil War tokens for Zanesville as well.
Yeah, that's probably the case because I know Morgan High School, they're called the Raiders, or at least they were. So that would be all correlate.
That's where it came from.
There you go. That's it. I mean, it only took 60 years, but I kind of got it figured out. But
hey, and now you know what your next collecting pursuit is, right? Zanesville, Ohio Civil War tokens.
Well, Jim Brokamp and I have talked about that on many occasions. So it's just like, you know, I go back to the presentation that I did witness at FUN. It's like, you know, the two things you need to know is don't try to buy everything and have a plan. Well, my plan is to buy everything. So that kind of just ruins it all for me here. But John, we do appreciate the fact that you spent the time with us here today and pass along that. We enjoy the monthly contributions you make and the work that you do. And once again, want to thank you. And we'll look forward to seeing you again sometime at the nearby shows and keep doing the great work that you're doing with all the organizations and ANACs.
Thanks. Thank you both. You have a great day now.
Thank you.
That was our interview with John Roberts, all about VAMS, Morgan Dollar, and Peace Dollar varieties. Very exciting, very helpful insights. And it was great to hear his story, his journey in the hobby.
Indeed. So we thank John for taking his time to join with us here today. We thank you for joining right along with us too. We hope that you enjoy the Coin World Podcast. Tell all your friends to be a part of it. Coin World Podcast. And until next time.
Happy collecting.
Thank you for listening to the Coin World Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, and we'll see you next week.
Coin World Plus is your new way to collect, manage your inventory, digitally authenticate coins, create your want list, buy and sell coins, and much more. Learn more about Coin World Plus at coinworldplus.com or download the app now at Google Play or the App Store.